I can feel us turning round on the ground of our being. We are beams from the same light. We are beams in this dark night, shining here from the clear of our sea. We do together what we could not do alone. We pull together and we bring each other home. We are hearts gently beating, one big heart in this fleeting dance of life, flying right to our freedom. We do together what we could not do alone. Together and we bring each other on. We are spokes in a wheel. We are spokes, and I can feel us turning round on the ground of our spokes in a wheel. We are spokes in a wheel. We are spokes in a wheel.
And that's my friend Jessica Ringel, as usual. Our paths traveled together for a while when we worked at Seton House together, and she's the songwriter, the musician, and the vocalist on that piece. And blessings on her journey, and I love hearing that every week because it reminds me what I'm on this planet for and what my intentions are. And with that, I am going to introduce my guest today. Making sure everything is on. Melanie Hagee. Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning, Carol.
Oh, good. Yeah, you're on and we're going. So thanks so much for coming down here. I just asked Melanie last night, I think, would she be interested in coming on the radio? And she graciously said she would. So yeah. You've traveled a long way to get here.
I have, and it's a delight to be here.
Well, let's start with where you're departed from. You live in Queens?
I live in Queens. I live in Long Island City, Queens, which is near LaGuardia Airport, about 20 minutes from Manhattan.
And you've lived there for a while?
About 12 years. I moved there in March of 1998.
Okay, so, and, you know, sometimes it's, what's your life like in New York? What's a day like for you? Where might you go? What might you do? A little sample in New York,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's actually useful to review that because you get into such a grind that you don't think about it. It's a good exercise. Well, you know, it's noisy there, so I'm usually up early. You know, there's morning sounds, and I live not far from the subway station, so I'll hear the trains, which you get used to. And if I'm working in a day job, 9 to 5, then I'm up and out of the house by about 7. Get on the train with everybody else, and rush hour trains are a real, real trip, I'll tell you. Packed.
Wow. You know, it's just fun to even, I like just your language, because it... Yeah. Tell us more.
Well, you know, for a while when you first get there, it's really exciting. And then it really gets to be, some people do it with great grace and ease, and they'll continue to hold their energy, and they read, or they've a lot of people plugged into iPods, and kind of you learn how to keep your personal space really, really tight. And especially in the morning trains, because people are very sensitive. And, you know, you come up out of the subway in Manhattan and you herd off with all the other people and they're going their prospective places. I've been working at a place right by the Empire State Building. So I'll come up by Macy's, walk a block, hang out there. There was an old department store called B. Altman's Department Store that was on a stretch of Fifth Avenue that had all the really beautiful old department stores. Saks Fifth Avenue, Macy's, Lord & Taylor. And so there's a great, you know, you see the history as you're walking up, and that's at 34th and 5th. And then I go back home, you know, or I go out and there might be something. You know, I don't participate as much as I probably could in some of what New York has to offer. If I'm not working, I'll have clients. I'm a body worker. Either I'll go to their home, often on the Upper East Side in New York, or, you know, and might take a jaunt into Central Park, take a walk. I have favorite places that I eat. Like to go to movies, sometimes I've just recently been walking around, mm-hmm. looking at stuff, looking at people, sitting and watching stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Do you have, when you go to Central Park, I've never been to New York, but this is better than a movie for me because I love imagining you doing these things.
That's great.
And so when you go to Central Park, are there favorite places you go? Or?
That's a great question. Well, you know, there are little corners of the park. It's big. And so the northern section of Central Park, I've not really even explored, except there's a really beautiful garden up there that I think you would really appreciate that was put in by the... could have been a private garden. I'm not sure the history of it. I like the reservoir area, although I don't often walk it. I think my favorite part is the area between 72nd, between Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is up around 81 and 5th, and then down to that southeast corner. And there's the duck pond, and there's the boat pond, and there's... this great little statue that I was telling you about yesterday of Alice in Wonderland, which was put in. It's beautiful. It's mm-hmm. and the kids love to play on it.
The Mad Hatter and all that.
The caterpillar. And I mean, there's some great public art in New York. You know, you can really access it. And what else? The zoo, Central Park Zoo, is really sweet. I peek in. I don't ever pay entrance. I just peek in and watch the sea lions. And they've got a great kids. It's actually a kind of an important research zoo, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Great Lawn. You know, I've been to a few functions at the Great Lawn. It's been a while, but I know the Dalai Lama was there. It can be a very large community gathering space.
Mm-hmm. They have concerts there, too.
They do. There's a place called Summer Stage,
mm-hmm.
and that's that. Or if they have free, but then they also have fundraising, and you can go, and there's some, often you'll see great international acts, or I think Joni Mitchell played there a while. They'll bring in people that you haven't seen for a while. And then I know that there were really large concerts. I think the Rolling Stones and big bands have done concerts on the Great Lawn, but it's been a while. The Philharmonic plays out there in the summer.
Right, that's what I think.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. Now, what about your personal safety?
That's a good question.
Mostly what we hear in the news, of course, is things that happen in New York to individuals. So.
Yeah, you know, it's I find that question often, and it's interesting. I don't feel personally at risk,
mm-hmm.
and I actually never have. Although that my first few years there, there was a lot of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine gave me a piece of advice, and he just said, you know, be careful. Just don't go to places where you're alone, like an alleyway. But they've done a lot in the time that I've been there to really lessen those dynamics in Manhattan. Now, I think there are parts of Brooklyn and Queens that, and certainly probably parts of Manhattan, north and areas that haven't gentrified so much, that you could possibly run into trouble. There's tension there.
Racial tension, would you say?
Oh, yeah, I think you'd find, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah,
sure.
It's mostly along economic lines.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And it's a city, I think, because there is such an accumulation of very, very, very wealthy people.
Yeah.
That Manhattan, particularly what I've noticed since I've been there in 12 years, and certainly parts of Brooklyn, people are not really paying attention to some of those things. Mm-hmm. And Michael Bloomberg, who's the mayor, I'll kind of step out and say this. There have been criticisms. He's done a fine job. I think he's a great businessman. But as far as some of the social situations, especially what I notice is between the police can be very aggressive. Mm-hmm. And that has been since those towers came down in 2001. There's a great, mm-hmm. much more fear, I think, on the table. And I've had several interactions with the police force in New York, which become very aggressive very fast.
Antagonistic,
yeah.
Yeah, well, that all makes sense. And, you know, it's my personal belief that they just reflect actually what's happening everywhere in the country, but it's because of the huge contrasts of wealth, as you mm-hmm. point out, and poverty, mm-hmm. and the concentration of people in a small area. It's very much magnifies what's happening. So would that we could notice that more and learn mm. more and use that as kind of our petri dish.
That's great.
To kind of look at ourselves as a country.
Yeah,
I think
that's right on.
Really reflects, even on Lopez Island, some of the tensions in different ways that are less visible.
Yes.
So I appreciate your way of reporting. And so you started on a journey a few weeks ago. How long has it been now?
Well, I flew out of LaGuardia on, I'm out of time now, July 20th.
Yeah, so.
19th. And then I was in the Olympic Peninsula for a week, or I spent a day and a half with friends in Port Angeles, and then was down at the Good Enough Community at Sahale for a Women's Way Long Dance, which went on for a week. And
is that what brought you to this coast then? And how did you get hooked up with them? Tell us a bit about your journey.
Well, I moved into the healing arts and started training in the healing arts, in mostly for my own healing, but also as a profession when I moved to New York. I got my massage license, finished at the Swedish Institute, and was licensed by New York State, and then went on to study biodynamic craniosacral therapy. And it deepened me into consciousness in a way that I hadn't anticipated. And I had relatives in Santa Fe, and knew that I was looking for a teacher or some people. I needed something that I couldn't find in New York. And so I met a woman named Connor Sauer, who had started Women's Way Long Dance and has a long tradition within, I think, many different traditions. And just is a very knowledgeable woman. And she invited me to Long Dance and also introduced me to a teacher in New York City. So those two veins, East and West Coast, I've been playing with. And last year, for the first time, I went, and it was their 21st year. So they are a community that, and there's a core group that has really hung together to make this thing work. And it's many things, but what I find compelling is that it's really about helping women of all ages come to a sense of themselves and their empowerment as individuals for leadership. And women's work, you know, the hearth is very important. And there's different rituals that are practiced and taught. And it's a very diverse community. They have another group that is based in Vashon Island that is called Women's Way. Oh, can't remember right now. Can't remember. But that is really for men and women and children. And so they are not exclusive, but I think they feel that the community feels it's very important that, given many of the dynamics that we're all facing at this time, that women coming to leadership and learning how to work together again as community, mm-hmm. from a feminine perspective,
right,
in balancing the male. So it's been very deeply profound. and I'm very grateful.
I'm going to want to hear more about that, but I anticipated some of what your answers might be and chose, selected a piece of music that I know you'll appreciate it, and I think our listeners will. Last year sometime we had a wonderful visit from Holly Near and Emma's Revolution, and this is their song, Listen to the Voices.
Of the First Nations. Listen to the voices of the First Nations, calling out the messages of the earth and sky, telling us what we need to know in order to survive. Listen to the voices of the First Nations. Listen to the voices of the old women. Listen to the voices of the old women, calling out the messages of the moon and sea, telling us what we need to know in order to be free. Listen to the voices of the old women. Listen to the voices of the young children. Listen to the voices of the young children, calling out the messages of the heart and soul, telling us what we used to know before the lies were told. Listen to the voices of the young children. Listen to the voices of the young children. Listen to the voices of the old women. Listen to the voices of the First Nations. Listen to the voices of the living.
And I know you've been listening to the voices of the old women.
Yes.
Listening to the voices of the children as they're born. And so let's go back to your journey and those voices of the old women that
yes.
you recently had the honor to participate in here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There is a group of elders in this particular community who have a profound wisdom, who've been, you know, and we're all finding our way, and each group how to step back into a place of mentoring, teaching, when it's appropriate to step forward, when it's appropriate just to listen. Each year in this particular group, and maybe I'll talk a little bit about the structure that I know of that might be useful, they step forward to lead that group, and then they are, you know, I think they are there as resources, although they don't put themselves on the young women who facilitate. Everybody steps forward. They feel called forward to a role. And then everybody works together to make it happen. And what I find fascinating about this model is that, in particular this year, it appeared to me that they were more seriously stepping into their role as the wise leaders, as the wise ones. And
their age range is in the 80s and 90s.
Some of them, you know, some of them are passing on, women that I don't know. And some of them come from the native tradition. So it's but many do not. It's a
right.
place where many traditions seem to come together.
Right.
Others who have very deep Celtic roots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very fascinating. The high range of the elders seems to be between 80 and maybe 68. And then there's a group of young elders who are moving, who have deep experience and just quite a lot of energy to bring, and are teaching and passing on and doing a great job of mentoring and leading. And what I noticed is on the low end, there doesn't tend to be a lot of young women or childbearing women, mm-hmm. or women with children. There are certainly women with childbearing age. We had a young woman who was just 17 there this year. Yeah, very, very conscious and beautiful and deep and young woman. Just, you know, I've seen. And then last year when I was there for the first time, there was a young woman who was probably in her 20s. So, yeah.
All right. And so a piece of what you talk about is the listening mm-hmm. to the voices. And mm-hmm. and is there a component there that, I don't know what it would be called, but a way to quiet oneself so one can hear? Mm. Or is it assumed that will emerge out of process?
Well, I think both, Carol. That's an interesting question. I think both. In our busy lives, you know, when I received a quote yesterday that I thought was really pertinent, and it was about as things move faster, it's part of a Hopi prophecy, and I don't know anything about it beyond that. It came through on an email that I got. But as things move faster in our lives and in the world out there, that for us to just slow down, and that's, you know, it's hard to do that. For me personally, in the work that I've learned and in some of the work that I do with others, learning that sense of stillness, coming to stillness through the body. You can do it through meditation. There are many ways to get there. But that presence, that simply being present, mm-hmm. and then from that emergent quality that you're referencing, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes it comes, I've learned that, or my experience is that it can come at you from a different direction as well. You might be in a state of dynamism, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a knowing, there's an understanding about process, through process.
Right.
So what I found really fascinating and part of the dialogue I'm having right now with a number of these teachers that are in the group is about teaching, effective ways to teach young people. Mm-hmm. And I hear it so often from that age group, is that by observation, but also by doing. So simply being present and observing, learning to cook, for example, mm-hmm. through observing. And that's a very effective way to learn and to be present to that. It demands a different attention. And then also finding space for asking questions and having dialogue, mm-hmm. which, you know, I think young people now who are immersed in a different way of seeing the world with technology, you know, their experience with technology, I'm wondering if the midpoint or the connection is somewhere between those two. Mm-hmm. To activate them, to get them out into the world, to do things, but also then to stop ourselves and to listen to them and what they have to tell us. Mm-hmm. And then that will be a different dialogue. I think the digital world dialogue is a very different dialogue. They speak a different language. In
yeah, we had yeah. a little sample of that last night.
Yeah, we did.
Will Comstock, who's an intern, mm-hmm. and we share meals with him, and we always sit down to dinner together, and he definitely has this, a different language and a great willingness to come to the table.
Yes, it was lovely.
So, yeah. Even the words, it's mm-hmm. like he could be speaking language from another country and culture, and I guess in some ways it is. It's yeah, yeah. another language from a different country and culture.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And it really requires, and the truth of the matter is I'm not so much drawn to that country and culture.
Right.
Which is problematic, because it's clear to me that in order to make connections, both people have to be invested in yeah. In other.
Yes, yes, yes.
In a meaningful yeah. way, and that's a bridge that I have to really quiet myself to cross.
it's so hard to understand, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, I find the same kind of like, I don't know if I understand how that happened. I grew up not having a computer and having a computer, just as you have in your life. And it's an extraordinary time, learning these different ways of being. I have nieces and nephews who I love very dearly, and they're in their 20s, some a little younger, and I find that they're hungry. These people, and it may be, I think we're all hungry, but they're hungry for connection. They're hungry for that embrace. They're hungry for the learning about ways in the history that is leaving. I mean, is no longer a part of how we're living so much in community or rural places. Mm-hmm. And so part of the call that I think I feel is to step forward and to make connection with them so that they feel that they know it a little bit, be open, and to get past my own irritation at the language, right, and the dynamic, so that,
right,
they can come to me and ask me if you know, or have a spontaneous storytelling with my nephew,
right,
about some things that the ancestry, where we come from.
Right.
And we spoke a little bit, you mentioned the work around babies, and maybe, mm-hmm, I'll plug that in there now,
yep,
seems appropriate. I think that the way that, and other people are speaking of this, so it's not me, but I can message it here, is that our birth processes and the lack of connection, bonding connection, and interference, a very interventionist birth process, and it's the way it is. I mean, I for many people, and I honor that, I think it might be worth looking at a little bit more closely and how it's changing our social fabric. I noticed that that technology, I think, is indicative of some of the direction that we've gone, and bringing back some of the warmth of the actual, whether it's the feminine dynamic in all of us,
mm-hmm,
and stepping forward and actually being responsible and saying, well, there are things that I need to teach you, we need to teach you.
Mm-hmm.
So a balance, somehow finding, mm-hmm, a balance. But I would say that in my exploration, I think that the coldness of technology that we're using in entering this life, and the interruption of bonding to the human body, to our mothers,
mm-hmm,
it, I think, again, is a reflection of what's going on in our earth. You know, there's something there. There's a piece there. So I explore that in my work with people. Also just my relationships with people,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
I find that there are young people who don't like to be touched. It's a very, mm-hmm, uncomfortable thing for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, as you speak, I remember my mind goes back to something I read from, I think the name of the book is Black Elk Speaks. And he was talking about the American Native Indigenous peoples in this country and in his tribe. I believe he was a Plains Tribes person. And he was talking about their a spirit quest, where they go out, mm-hmm, by themselves and wait for a vision to come. But he was talking about it in the context of a culture that is tribal.
Mm-hmm.
And so these children are born into this tribal culture where all the aunties and uncles are as responsible for them as their parents are.
Mm.
And so the individuation, mm, process is ritualized,
yeah,
because they're very much bonded collectively to the whole tribe.
Right, right.
So it's one, it's an entity that can be imagined, understood, and lived all at the,
yeah,
same time.
Beautiful.
And then when other cultures, such as ours, who come from a nuclear family model, without that, impose those same rituals with our children, which aren't really relevant to their personal needs,
right,
of belonging and bonding,
right, right,
which you're talking about. I mean, it's not, you know, I don't mean to be critical, but it's, as you say, it's worth attending to, yes, rather than transporting ritual,
yes,
from one culture to another, where the roots, the very life experiences for generations come from a different nucleus.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's somehow relevant.
It is.
What you're talking about.
Yeah, and what I would say to that, which I think is quite important, is that understanding, and you referred to it yesterday in our conversation, is that really understanding that this was a big piece for me when I understood that the nuclear family is a relatively recent structure in American life, and that it has benefits. So if you break down the larger fabric, it has benefits for outside entities who have other ideas in mind. So
like
you
people who need a workforce.
That's right. Mm-hmm. People become consumers. I mean, if you look, yeah, at the growth from the 1940s and 50s of where we've come, you become consumers rather than citizens, mm-hmm, right? So mm-hmm, that life becomes about two people who have a lot of stuff going on, mm-hmm, trying to raise children according to a model that the values are really about money, monetary, mm-hmm, identity.
Right. And an individual,
yeah,
even though it's done in a small collective of two adults.
Yes, yes, yes.
Very small and isolated, but they're a political entity, a economic entity, and they are individuals who aspire,
yes,
to an individual vision and,
yes,
fate.
Yes. And what I find interesting about that, Carol, is that we lose this really true awareness that each of us is an individual. We are not the same, but we can live together. And that's what I find. I mean, I grew up in a small town with a large extended family, as I was telling you the other night, you and Alan. So it feels like it was another time.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've gotten to know, you know, as I've grown up, this disjunction for me between this idea that to live in a place where everything is the same, you know, you live in a suburb, a designed place, a nature, and everything is the same. And in that sameness, then you look to your neighbor to see what it is, how it is you should be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, yes.
Yeah. So coming back around, I feel like it's a model that is failing, personally.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that it's quite strong. And I'm looking for, and I'm hearing more and more visionary voices. And I feel like sitting with you and Al, and in this community, which is, well, I took a walk last night, and it's just an extraordinary place here. Very beautiful, which touches me deeply, living in that big city and being able to be here and expand and be in your home and eat good food and just have a lot of space and time, but good community conversation, or good conversation. Not only, I think, are people hungry for the real human connection, as well as all this great, you know, Roy Rogers kind of stuff that's going on, I think that we're also listening for a visionary voice, for visionary voices to lead us. And where that will come from, you know, I think we're hearing it, little bits and pieces, that song Holly Near speaks about. I think that Barack Obama probably came, you know, I think there was something there for him, and I hope that's his strength will come forward in that way. I think it's a pretty big, and you know, I think Washington is a pretty...
Talk about the long dance.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he's in for the long dance.
Yeah, so do I.
And
so
we
do
all
I.
are.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's to expect... we're just such a country based on expediency and nowness.
Yeah.
That the whole, even when exposed to the vision,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
which I believe he brought this country to.
I mean, too.
I don't want to go too far into that field, but
yep,
to hold on to that through the mess of the day.
Yes, yes, yes.
Is, I mean, that's our. We must.
Yeah.
We have to learn to do that.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that's not new. I mean, good heavens, our, you know, from the beginning, the human beings stood upright. Their days were messy, but
great.
Constantly, but something, there was some human resilience that moved them forward.
Right, right.
Beyond evolution.
That's beautiful. Yes. I agree with you.
Yeah. And somehow we've got to tap that.
Yeah, and I think trusting it, you know, that's one of the things that coming out here and maybe reconnecting to the earth for me. Mm-hmm. We have this dialogue, we use these words that say we have to save the earth. And I think we should be very thoughtful about how we are in our world, in this nest that we have, this beautiful, beautiful place that we've been given or to be with all the other creatures. And but maybe another way of putting it that is more useful is to say, to really start asking questions about how we will save our species or how we will continue on, and whatever frame you use for that dialogue, then it becomes more manageable and less, to me, less arrogant. It's
right.
Yeah.
What's our place?
Yeah.
And how do we keep and honor our place as one of the species?
Yes, yes.
And, you know, what are our strengths and the challenges we face? And, of course, one of the challenges we face is our brain. I mean, how big it is and how much we, you know, how our ideas and our innovation and our desire to go to the moon.
Yeah.
And to go. Yeah. And it's both a gift and a huge barrier to...
Yeah, it is.
The evolution of the species and the survival of the species.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, when they're in New York at the Natural History Museum, which is an incredible place, big. I haven't not really been there that many times, but they built a very large new planetarium.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really great space. And in it, you get a sense, what they did is there's a spiral staircase that goes around, it's a glass structure, a glass box, and then within it is a spiral staircase. And on that staircase, they've built a map of cosmic time. And what our concept of time is within that large structure that the physicists are mapping and can think about in ways that my brain just can't think about that.
Right, exactly.
Right? So if I look at this little segment of time and I say, well, I have, oh my, what does this mean? You know, what we're going through and what does this mean? But then if you expand that out into a larger, you know, it's like the Copernican revolution, right? So, knowing that little bit of history from the perspective that I learned it is that it changed the way that we understood this place. Humans understood, you know, no longer were we the center of that particular idea, that, and the church didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it did change things, and we went into a whole no way. And I believe that, we going to the moon, you know, sometimes I think about that, we're not really... You know, there's a lot of mythic kind of dialogue around that too, isn't it? What does it mean to have stepped on the moon, who had such a beautiful mythic part, you know, story?
Right.
And then, you know, and what that money might have done for the people here, and what are we doing? And maybe within the larger scheme of things, it's about the expansion of our consciousness farther out into the cosmos, because we're looking deeply. Now we have machines that we send out there that show us pictures of...
Right.
It's huge.
Right.
It's an amazing time of exploration.
Right.
And I don't know that we... And I think it scares us, frankly. I think there's an existential fear there that scares us, and that we don't, you know, maybe our human arrogance or maybe some of the dialogue that we have about it is really about saying, well, maybe we're really not so special after all.
Right.
Or unique, or powerful, or... And we have to adjust to that.
Right. Absolutely. It's really still a little bit hard for my brain to capture all that because I haven't, you know, I don't have the visual image. But your language helps me.
Great.
It really helps me. So how in the world did you get to Lopez? Back with our feet on the planet, traveling one foot in front of the other on a journey.
Well, this is, yes. Thank you. Well, I'm so glad I'm here. In about the last year, I met a young man named Dan Doty and his partner, Jess Blake. two really beautiful young people. And he and I got to be, well, all of us got to be friends, although he and I had a little bit more time together, and we would talk. And I knew that I was setting off, leaving New York on this journey, and that it was important that I have some time and space after the experience of Long Dance to be in a place where, you know, I wanted to get my hands in the earth and do some work. And I've been kind of compelled about what I'm hearing about places where people can go and work for exchange and farm and learn farming like that. And so I put out a call to a group of people, but I asked Dan specifically, and I knew that he had come out here with his brother the previous year, although Dan wasn't really clear where he was. And I asked him if he knew of a place, and he said, yeah, let me think about that and I'll get back to you. And so he, through his friend Ben, put me in contact with the two of you. Mm-hmm. And I'd come through here in the mid-80s when I worked up in the fisheries in Alaska, up in the canneries in the fisheries in Alaska, but I'd never stop in the San Juans. And I was really compelled by them and wanted to come back. And so, you know, in a way, it's a fulfillment of that desire. Mm-hmm. And to land in your home, to have this opportunity with you and Al, has been very, very beautiful and deep, and I thank you so much for that. You make a place for people, for travelers, and I think that's a really important, given how you live your life and everything. Yeah. So.
Well, you're most welcome, and I, whenever we speak, Melanie, you are a visionary and a mentor, and you speak from your heart. Mm. Whether your personal journey or your understanding of our collective journey. And I'm moved and grateful for your presence on this earth and that our lives have touched. And I have to say, in all honesty, Dan said, we're encouraging her to get out of the city. And so I have to say publicly that I'm encouraging you to consider a longer visit to Lopez sometime. So I've said that on the air. There's people that have witnessed it. That's in my heart only.
I wondered about that, Carol.
Although I have to say, in all honesty, you are a traveler and came into our home, and that is the only way we have interacted. But, you know, Dan did plant that seed.
Well, thank you.
So I guess I can point to Dan and say, Dan, come on, you're the root of this idea. I have not told Melanie that before, so you heard it here for the first time.
Well, you know, it's funny because when you told me that they had been here just before I landed, I had to puzzle about that. I thought, well, I was excited and I was disappointed and I loved it. I loved the idea that they were there, but was saddened that I missed them. Yeah. But also really understood that and kind of wondered, you know, he and I think we've had dialogues about New York City. And, you know, and honestly, it's true. I've been wondering about whether that's the place for me. And part of this exploration is to see what else is out there.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but I know that I've got some more time there, yeah. Unless something completely, you know, I think when you send yourself off into the, on the journey.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
I know. I spent one night on Lopez and here I am 35 years later.
Oh, beautiful.
And I wasn't even looking. But I was looking, but I didn't know it. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for listening. And I'm going to go out with another Holly Near here. I'm always awkward about the music and the timing. And this is Swimming to the Other Side. Really an appropriate way. And stay tuned for the Quaker Spirit in Action, the National Quaker program sponsored by the local fellowship. Holly Near, Emma's Revolution, Swimming to the Other Side. I think. Doesn't sound like it.
When you speak the language of your life.
That's okay. We're with this.
I do not know the story. The words are only sound.
and they leave my mind to wonder. Perhaps you speak of the mountains or the child you used to be, of the city Santiago and the moment you were free to sing the songs of love, the songs of hungry hearts and of the dream. Do you speak of the dream when you speak the language of your love? I do not know the story. Words are only sounds, and they leave my mind to wonder. But when you soar through my heart with a melody, I hear the dancing feet, I taste the salty tears, I know the laughing jug and the moment of the dream. For when you sing your language, I feel love. Ah, now I know the story. The songs are mighty sounds, and they fill my mind with wonder. And when you soar through my heart with a melody, I hear the dancing feet, I taste the salty tears, I am the laughing child, sing to me the dream. Come fill my mind with wonder and sing to me the dream.
This is KLOILP, Lopez Island, Washington, 102.9 FM.